One note before we start the show. This is Sam. Yvonne was remote this week, not at his usual computer at home, and we had a bit of problem with his audio quality on the connection he had throughout basically the whole show, off and on. So there are a few points where his audio quality is below par, and we had to reconnect with him a couple of times. So I just wanted to apologize in advance for those difficulties. But, you know, we did the best we can. Anyway, here's the show. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Wednesday, April 6th, 2016. It's, 314 UTC. Pi. Yay.
Yay!
It's been a few weeks since we had one of those, so.
Yes!
I'm Sam. Yvonne's here. Hello, Yvonne. I'm Sam.
Hello.
Sam Minter, I should say, and Yvonne Bo. Did I already say that? I'm so confused already, and we're only, like, less than a minute
into
the show.
We're only, like, seconds into the show.
And I'm already just, like, I have no idea what the hell is going on. So, anyway, our agenda for today, let me get it right up front. We are, of course, going to talk about Election 2016, but we'll put it at the end of the show. We've got this whole Panama Papers thing that came out over the course of the week. And we had a big announcement and pre-orders and everything for Tesla. And so we're going to talk about that, too. So a little bit different stuff, not all election the whole time. And after we get those things done, then, of course, we'll talk about the election. As we are recording right now, the results of the Wisconsin primaries on the Democratic and Republican side are still rolling in. They've already declared the winners long ago, Cruz and Sanders, but the details are still fleshing out the exact delegate counts, exact percentages as they count. But we'll get to that soon enough because we're actually recording a day earlier than we usually do, which is interesting. Because Yvonne had some things going on. But before we get to any of that, Yvonne, you wanted to point out that you indeed, in fact, did get, have received, and are actually speaking on at this very moment, the new iPhone SE.
Yes, I am on an iPhone SE. I got it. Three key things to mention that I've uncovered while I've had it for 5 days. Okay. Number one, Wi-Fi that is substantially better than on my old phone. Okay.
Wi-Fi. Of course, as you're speaking, you're cutting in and out a little bit, so we can blame it all on your phone. But
I'm not on the Wi-Fi, so that may be part of the problem. And I just realized, by the way, we may want to. I'm not getting you on a clear connection.
Okay, we will talk about Yvonne's wonderful new phone after we take a quick break so he can make his phone work. We'll be back after this.
Yes.
This is a break. Oh, yes, this is a break. This is a break because no one gave me any suggestions. I warned you. So this is a break. This is a wonderful break. A wonderful break. Yes, indeed, this is a break. This is a break in the middle of Curmudgeon's Corner. Yes, this is a break. Yes. This is a break. Break. Yes. This is a break. Yes, this is a break. Break. Yes, it is a break. And now the break is over.
Hello,
Mr. Bo.
All right. Okay.
Now, can you hear me? Okay.
We'll see.
Okay. Once again, this is an auspicious start for the show. Anyway, your new phone has great Wi-Fi.
Yes.
So I'm now talking to you on the actual phone. So.
Yes, you're talking to me now on the actual phone line. The other thing is that the sound quality on voice calls, and I don't know if you noticed this when you went to your old phone, your new phone, but I guess that must have been also on your phone, but you don't talk much on the phone.
Very rarely.
But the actual sound of people is incredibly better, okay? Number one, you actually hear people clear, okay, the quality of the conversation. But at the same time, the technology you're using to eliminate background noise when you're in a noisy place is also a lot better, so they can hear you better as well.
Right.
Okay.
Have you turned on all the have you turned on all the call over Wi-Fi features and all that kind of stuff, or does your carrier not
have
it yet?
No, I have. My carrier allows that, and I have turned that on to use it when needed. So I've got that. And the third thing is incredibly better battery life. I mean, way better. I got home, I got to the hotel tonight with still over 30% of my battery, all right, at past 10:30 at night. Look, that has never happened before, unless I've been plugged in, like, half the day, okay?
Right.
So yeah, that battery life, that's just...
Yeah, they've definitely made some improvements there, and add the low battery feature on top of that, and it's, you know... Whenever I know, it already lasts longer, and then when I, if I know I'm going to be out for a long time, you know, I'll turn on the low battery thing as soon as I leave the house, and it just stretches it, like, forever.
Yeah, and I do that, especially when I know I'm going to be out in, like, meetings or something or whatever, I just turn that on, you know, just to make sure that I'm going to be out, like, with that. So, overall, I've been very happy with it since I had it, so I'm going to... Like it's really, you know, those are very nice extras that I really appreciated with the phone. So I've been pretty happy with it.
Okay.
So, there you go.
Anything else to say about your lovely new phone?
No. I'm in Orlando.
You're in Orlando for work?
I am. Yes, for work.
Less fun than going to Disney, right?
I would have preferred to be at Disney than at a software conference.
Okay, well, I don't have anything else exciting to say from my end. I'm still, like, somewhat sick, but, I mean, I've been back at work. I've been doing my stuff, but I'm still coughing all the time and hangs on forever. But, you know, whatever.
Okay.
Anyway, we will take a quick break, and then we will talk about the Panama Papers first. Back after this.
You're in the Valley, AM 1620 and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs.
Everybody's doing a brand new dance now.
Come on, baby. Let's do the twist.
Well, they got a new dance and it goes like this.
Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, we are back, and we're back on Skype. It sounds a lot better than the phone. And
yes, it does.
And this time, hopefully, we got a better connection, so we won't repeat this, like, technical difficulties things 8 times for the rest of the show.
Yes, we'll try not to.
And I just blame it all on your new phone. This is the iPhone SE's fault.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Anyway, it's good. Yeah, whatever. Okay, it's always better when you're doing it on a computer than when you're doing it on.
Yes, it is much better. But I'm not home. Okay, the computer is like 200 miles away. So
you didn't bring a computer with you, or you just don't want to do it on your work computer.
I don't have Skype on my work computer. So anyway.
Okay. So the Panama Papers. So this is somewhat financial in nature. So I will let you explain what the hell is going on with this stuff, and then we can talk about it. So what's going on?
Well, okay. So there is this law firm that is based out of Panama. Oh gosh, the name. Let me pronounce it properly. But I'll pull it up in a second. But so this law firm specialized in incorporating creating offshore corporations. Okay, they had operations in a lot of different locales, and somebody just took a stash of their documents. And they when you create a corporation, many times, if you don't live in that country, you need somebody to be your legal representative of the company.
And okay? So that's what this law firm did. right?
Correct. They were the registered agents, and they acted on your behalf as the representatives for this for your company, wherever they are. I mean, and this is something that's done legally for many reasons around the world, including in the U.S. I mean, I have a little company that I created for certain business dealings and stuff that I do, and I have a registered agent for a company like this. It's a company that specializes on it, but this is not that
for all your own tax evasion needs.
Oh, of course, yes, yeah. Absolutely. And so the thing is that, you know, so this leak from this company just showed how many people.
And basically, just to give an idea of this scale, I forget how many millions of documents, like 11 million documents or something like that, but spanning decades, like going back like to the 70s.
Yes, yes. I mean, it looked like quite a lot of like scanned actual papers. I mean, I keep wondering, was this stuff like in boxes and somebody just fucking like stole the documents and just started scanning them?
It's probably more likely that the company themselves at some point scanned them as part of some digitization project.
Well,
and then you got them from there.
Go back and do backfile conversions of that kind of stuff. Okay?
Yeah.
It's just not cost effective, you know, especially when it's just old records.
Not like it would be cost effective for whoever was leaking it either.
No, but at least if you were doing it,
let's back up. I mean, we know that in the end, the documents were electronic and, you know, journalists from all over the world were looking at them. But how do we know have they specified, was the original original dump here delivered on a thumb drive, or did somebody pull up with a truck full of boxes?
I have not seen how this dump happened. I'm not sure. Okay. I don't know. What I will say, it's just the main thing is that somehow they've got, I mean, basically, like, very extensive records of this law firm, of all the companies that they have created and for what people. And it's just, it's been quite a laundry list of famous people around the world, many, many politicians, many, many people who had been under suspicion for laundering money. The funniest thing is, last week before the dump happened, I had some friends of mine from Brazil coming over, and Brazil has been rocked by quite a lot of political scandal regarding bribes and money laundering and all of this stuff.
Yeah, we talked about that a few weeks ago on the show.
Yes, and the one thing they asked, that they were saying, you know, look, the judge that is in this investigation has already recovered, I mean, $20 billion in like pilfered money. I mean, $20 billion. And, you know, we were saying, my God, $20 billion that's been found. Imagine how much really has been stolen, which has to be in the hundreds of billions. And they were wondering, where did all the money go? And we were sitting in downtown Miami, and I said, dude, look right here. You're looking at it. And what these papers showed is that's what I said was absolutely accurate. Okay. That a lot of these front companies were made to buy quite a lot of very expensive real estate in Miami. As a matter of fact, the dump was given to I understood two sources, and one of them happened to be the Miami Herald specifically. The other one was I don't know, this consortium of investigative journalists,
right?
And well, presidents of many countries. The president of Iceland resigned over this because he appeared as a person with a shell company. I mean, you've got aides to Vladimir Putin, a lot of high level people in the Brazilian government, very rich people, prominent people in Mexico that were connected to the Mexican president, the name of the current president of Argentina that just got elected was in one of those. I mean, et cetera. I mean, it's like a who's now, who.
One of the very interesting things here, though, is notably missing from this dump are prominent American politicians. There were some Americans in the dump, but not American politicians. Which is just an interesting omission.
Well, I don't know if it's an omission. I mean, I guess they're not as crooked as from the rest of the world.
Well, I don't know, because we also don't know the provenance of this leak. You know, like, it could well be that this leak is a U.S. intelligence operation.
No, I don't think it is. Look, I'm just throwing it out there. No. But Americans have been just less prone to, like, using this type of offshore corporation for hiding money. The main reason is because there is far more currency certainty and tax certainty and certain things in the U.S. versus in other countries. Okay.
Mm, right.
We don't have currency controls in place or stuff like that happen.
Right. So there's a lot more reason to hide your money in these kinds of things. Whereas, you know, the American politicians and famous people for the most part are just like, yeah, I got all my money. Look at it. Right. It's right here.
Exactly.
Whereas, yes. You know, if you're the president of Iceland or the prime minister of Iceland, maybe you want to hide it from the high taxes there.
Well, there was a massive currency drop like years back. There were currency controls in place because the Icelandic economy went into, got really killed in the 2008 crash because their banks went all belly up. In the 2008 crash,
right? Well,
because they were super exposed to all the shit in Wall Street. So right, yeah,
well, and one of the things that came out with the Icelandic guy was that apparently some of the investments of his shell firm were actually in some of the banks that he was working to save, and so that maybe there's a conflict of interest, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But
right, yeah. So you know, I mean, it's like, I mean, the list of people, like, I just think that in general, it's just I think for people in other countries, it, because of many reasons, there are always controls and rules and things. Getting money out is more important. And look, I do truly believe. Look, there's a lot. Listen. There is corruption in the U.S. There's no doubt about it. But what I'm saying is it's all relative. Okay, all right. I think it's like I always keep going back to the phrase that the Argentinian guy told me, that it's like, look, we're not asking our politicians not to steal. We know they all steal, but we just are trying to ask them not to steal everything. Okay.
Well, and you know, you mentioned a variety of these. The one that hasn't come out of your mouth yet is Putin, because he was not directly in any of these documents.
But a lot of his associates were.
Yeah, a lot of the people very close to Putin, his inner circle, are. And, you know, there have been one of the things that people have said about this whole release is that one of the reasons why, you know, it did get a lot of press, but people expect it'll sort of go away relatively quickly, is because it's like everybody looks at this and says, oh, politicians are corrupt and stealing money. Okay, we knew that already.
Right.
You know, and specifically with Putin, I mean, I was watching a Frontline documentary from last year, a few weeks ago, on Putin, and it was all about how, you know, he had all kinds of deals and he was stashing money away and putting it with his friends and doing this, and how, you know, he was a billionaire many, many times over, and, you know, based on this secretive stuff, and how, you know, arguably he might be in the top 10 in the world if all his money was open, but it's all secret. And this just shows how some of this is happening, you know? And so I think it is an interesting view into all of this stuff that's been going on, but, you know, is it shocking? It really isn't all that shocking, you know?
No, it's not shocking. I think it's more like one of these things where you knew this was happening, but it's very interesting to look at the actual details that you didn't get before.
Okay, kind of similar to the Snowden leaks. I mean, everybody sort of assumed there was stuff out there, but actually seeing it laid out in front of you lets you view it in a different perspective.
Yes, yes, yes. I think that's what it is more than anything. So, you know, I mean, I know that one of the things that's happened from this is that there are, I mean, a lot of countries are sifting through the information to actually launch, like, tax investigations.
Yeah.
Yes. Which I think is one of the reasons why this may not go away from the public, like, in the papers, like, thing. But, you know, tax authorities are very well known for, like, chasing.
Yes. Countries want their money.
Yeah, so I think that, those guys are certainly going to be take that information and they're going to be fucking chasing the money. That's for sure. And look, in Brazil, this investigation, for example, on the bribery that's been going on. Look, this thing has been going for a year and it hasn't receded from the Brazil headlines. I mean, the judges have collected more than $20 billion. I mean, look, believe me, with this more information, I mean, they've been unrelenting. I don't see how this is certainly not. This is a boost, and more than anything, at this point, out of the papers, apparently, the vice president of Brazil was implicated in one of these shell corporations. And as a matter of fact, they've started now impeachment proceedings against the vice president of Brazil. And so there's an impeachment proceeding going against the president of Brazil, and now they're starting one against the vice president of Brazil.
Oh, I'm sure that's lovely.
Yes.
Number three in line, better watch out.
I believe that also I was reading a document where the number three in line in Brazil may also get impeached.
for the U.S. equivalent. So that's the president, the vice president, the speaker of the House. And now you're talking about the Senate president pro tem becoming president or whatever.
Basically. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Lovely, lovely, lovely. Okay. Right. Anything else on this? Are there any implications? Like, apparently the government of Iceland is going down. Anyone else, like, immediately in danger out of this thing?
We elected the president of Brazil. Now, look, he said the statement, okay, because his family had been a prominent business family. He was in the documents. He was named an officer of a company that his father had set up, and he actually explained what the reason was for the setup. Apparently, it was for an investment that they said was tax declared for an investment that was happening on something outside of Argentina. So they set up the corporation. I mean, this was not. He's saying, listen, this is for a legitimate investment. This was not set up as a shell to hide any activity. You know. We needed an investment. We set up an offshore corporation, and we declared the money. That's the statement that came out.
Well, the Icelandic prime minister said something similar as well. That hey, I declared it on my taxes. Why are you bothering me? But
right. So that's the thing that I'm like, I don't know how this is going to stand up. Now the reality is that also look, there were quite a lot of people that were connected to the president of Argentina that also have come up prominently in the papers as well. They were all in the inner circle of the former president of Argentina as right. well. So it's like, I mean, shit. You know? Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty bad. So.
So we'll and Alex is here. So we'll hear more about this as that process continues.
All right. Okay. A moment for a break.
Yeah, let's take a break, and we'll be back in a couple minutes to talk about what was next in line. Oh, Tesla.
Tesla.
Back after this.
Bring me the pen, it's gonna be so. Bring me the pen, it's gonna be so. Thank you for using your conference account information.
And we're back, and it's time to talk about Tesla. So I'll start out with the building I work at is in Seattle, and more to the point, it is directly across the street from a Tesla dealership.
Okay.
So on the day that they were doing their, you know, big announcement pre-order thing, there was a thing I had at work in another building, and then I walked back to my building around noon and noticed that there was a line around the fucking block at the Tesla dealership.
And because they were
opening pre-orders, I guess, at 7 p.m. Pacific time that night or something. I don't know exactly when, but it was hours and hours and hours before that. And there was a huge line all the way around the block. And I actually didn't know what it was for. I'm like, what the hell are all those people lined up at the Tesla dealership? I found out later, of course. And so it turned out. Yeah.
Okay. Couldn't you pre-order?
Could I?
I'm just saying.
Oh, me? I don't. I'm not in the market for.
Not you.
Oh yeah, you could pre-order online. So they must have been on. I think they were online for test drives or something. I don't know what they were online for.
I mean, they don't have any models in the show.
Yeah, so I don't know what they were. But there was a huge line all the way around the block for.
I think it's just a fashionable thing to be.
It was like waiting in line for Apple. They wanted to pre-order in person, I guess, because I know all kinds of people were posting screenshots of pre-ordering from their damn iPhones and stuff.
Right.
So in any case, apparently Tesla had maybe they had an event there to, I don't know. I guess people just wanted to do it in person. But anyway, okay. They announced their Tesla Model 3, which is the mass market Tesla, the first one. They started out with a sports car, and then they went to a luxury car, and now they're releasing the sort of mass market car that's priced around $35,000. So it's still an upper end mass market car. It's not like a budget car. But I didn't see what they got. 115,000 pre-orders in the first few hours, and it's up to like more than double that at this point. I haven't even looked at the numbers today, so it's probably even higher by now.
I know the last one that I saw was over 200,000 pre-orders.
Yeah, I thought I saw even 300,000 at this point.
Yeah, that could be. Yes, you may be right.
But it's off the top of my head, could be wrong as well. But anyway, they a shitload of people pre-ordered these, and these aren't just like put my name on a list. It's put $1,000 down.
Right.
And they showed off the car. Like most of these pre-orders, by the way, the first 115,000 pre-orders or whatever came from people who hadn't even seen the damn car yet. Because they hadn't showed it off on their little thing yet. So then they did their little announcement and showed off the car and its features and what it looks like and all that kind of stuff. It looks kind of cool. You know?
I mean, it looks all right. I mean, I'm still a little bit, like, hesitant on the whole all-electric thing, me personally. But I can see how a lot of people find this car attractive and they want one. I mean, you know, that's,
you know,
it looks
I'm
it.
Still not sold on the big ass screen in the middle.
Neither am I.
It's not that I in any way mind the notion of a big ass screen. It's just it seems like it's a little bit too. It's too big and rectangular and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know. I would rather take the same elements.
Thing,
I don't know.
Listen, my overall thing.
But it looks cool.
I went to shop. I shopped the Model S.
Yeah.
Was the fact that, look, they have no buttons in the fucking car. Everything has to be through that damn touch screen.
And when you're driving, having something tactile is nice.
Yes, this is very annoying that they insist on no fucking buttons.
Yeah, and
even to open the damn sunroof, you have to go through a fucking screen on the goddamn thing.
I mean, even when I got my car, the car I have, I specifically chose the audio interface that, you know, I didn't want the built-in GPS with the slightly bigger screen. I wanted actual physical buttons for like messing with things rather than a touchscreen. And I like touchscreens in other contexts. I love my phone. I love my iPad and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, if I'm driving, one of the key things is I want to be able to reach over and do what I need to do without actually looking at it. And when you've got just a flat surface, you have to look at the damn thing.
Now,
I guess you can add voice control and all that kind of stuff. But honestly, I've never been all that attracted to the voice control. You know, I want to touch it.
Listen, the voice control does. A friend of mine in a show said one time, it's strict disobedience. I mean, you know, look, every time I do use the voice control of my car, but you know, every once in a while, you know, like a lot of times I will say a command and it does something completely different. I mean, you know, I one time equated this that, you know, that my voice command kind of equates to the relationship that I have with my wife. I can go and I can ask for it for something and I will get a random return, something in return. It's possible it may do what I ask, but many times something else will happen that has nothing to do with what I asked. So I like the buttons. Okay.
So aside from that, as you said, you know, you're still a little not sold on the whole electric thing, and it's got a 215 mile range, which is more than a lot of cars in this class, but at the same, more than a lot of other electric cars, I should say. But it's still a lot less than the gas tank, you know.
I barely would have made it here. Okay, and then I gotta find a place to charge.
Well, that part of their announcement here is and this thing, by the way, is like almost 2 years out still before you'll actually get one of these in your hand. I think it's 18 months or something like that.
Yes.
And part of what they're saying is they're massively expanding their supercharger network as part of the rollout for this thing as well.
Well, but here's the thing. My car that I have, fuel card, is pretty relatively fuel economical. I can make this round trip without refueling.
Yeah, like my car is like 400 and something miles on a tank, and you know that's somewhat normal here, and so yeah, there's clearly use cases this is meant for and use cases it's not. Long range cross country driving is not what these are for yet.
And I know a lot of people that don't have like these drives like I do regularly, to which the car, I mean, would be very attractive, and it would be a great car. I think it does look good, but I'm still not completely sold on the whole Tesla way of making a car and designing the car. I know a lot of people find it attractive.
What part of it don't you like?
Well, in general, the whole thing we're just talking about, the whole touchscreen, how everything has got to be through the electronic, number one.
What else?
Okay, that's one. The other part is I don't like the damn interior. To me, it does look cheap and chintzy, okay, the way they finish it. I just don't like the materials. It just, for whatever reason, I just haven't liked it, okay? So those two things, aside from the fuel, from the thing about charging and refueling, I mean, those three things are still, you know, have me a little bit hesitant about it. Now, look, on the other side, I mean, you have a car that has a 200-plus mile range, has very good performance, has very good interior room. They definitely have a lot of pluses on their end, and I can see quite a lot of people buying it because it does have a lot of pluses on that end. And, I couldn't sit there with somebody that bought it and tell them, you're a fucking idiot. No, I wouldn't tell them that. I would think that they probably made a pretty good choice. I mean, that's just not a choice that, you know, like, that maybe I would be willing to do right now.
Aside from its appropriateness for you, which it obviously isn't, what do you think of this in terms of, you know, Tesla as a business and where they're competing with the rest of the automotive industry over the next few years?
I do think it's a game changer. I think it is going to force other people to move more towards very fuel efficient electric, you know, these types of vehicles. I do believe that. And look, the numbers don't lie right now. The United States gasoline consumption, even with gasoline prices going down, gasoline consumption in the United States has been going down for the last like 4 or 5 or even I don't know how many years, like right now.
I mean, they're starting to go back up again right now, but Whatever. The long-term trend has been down.
Exactly. So, you know, it's been a long-term downtrend. You know, I don't see how this doesn't continue this way. I mean, I think this is the future.
So you think this will be? I mean, obviously there are a couple other companies that have their electric cars out and have been pushing new models, and but you think this is going to just force an acceleration of that trend?
Oh, absolutely, no doubt about it, no doubt about it.
So by the time this thing launches in, I guess, what, early 2018, I guess, or late 2017?
Late 2017 is what I understood.
Do you think it's going to be on time?
I think it'll be 2018.
Okay. And like they may get the first ones out in 2017, but now they've got like a 300,000 car backlog or whatever.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, so I don't know how they're going to ramp up production.
Yeah, because they've indicated themselves that this is way more pre-orders than they thought they'd get.
Look, they are making like right now 50, 60,000 cars a year.
Right.
We're talking about, you know, all of a sudden quadrupling production.
Right.
I mean, yeah.
I think Elon Musk tweeted out something like, okay, we've got some work to do now.
Yeah, no shit. Gotta build a shitload of cars.
But anyway, by the time this thing comes out, do you think it at that, I mean, we're 18 months out in the future yet, how much of this change will already happen? Like, we won't quite yet be at the point where you go to a dealership and the default is electric. We're still a ways out from that.
Almost every other car company is launching plug-in hybrids. Electric.
Well, they all have them, it's not like the majority or anything.
But they are launching more models that are more price competitive, more mainstream, more accessible to people. It's just, you know, it's just happening very quickly.
Right.
You know, it just is. I mean, BMW has launched a line of like hybrid electric vehicles that are very efficient. They've launched the i3. They've been selling a lot of those as well. Volkswagen made a very big commitment to electric, like recently, especially in the face of this whole diesel scandal that they had like recently happen. You know, GM has been launching a number of vehicles as well. Look, I mean, it's just this is happening, you know, this is happening. Okay. Man, it's happening, and this is just going to push it even harder when people see the demand for this. I mean, the other competitors are going to be scrambling to catch up because they can't. I mean, you know, you're talking about the volume of sales that you're looking at here is basically what BMW sells for their most popular car line in a year in the United States, or close to that. That is something that a company like, and it's in their price range.
Right,
they can't just sit around with their hands under their ass and just let Tesla take away their market.
Mm-hmm.
So there is going to be a substantial competitive response, in my opinion.
So what has Tesla said? They basically laid out their roadmap for a while as they're getting to this car. Have they said what's next after this one yet?
I don't recall hearing anything specific to what's next after this.
Because, the things I can imagine, of course, are one, of course, the next step down, like, you know, a 25K car instead of a 35K car. But that may not be the market they want to go into. The other thing is continuing to advance that range, because the real, like, oh, my God, this is it, is when that range hits 400 or 500 miles.
Yes. Yes, yes. And I'm sure that's, you know, that's a big part of Elon Musk's plan is like to work a lot on
along
battery.
With the self-driving, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. I was interested. I was just fascinated by the huge just the line I saw and the numbers here. I mean, and, you know, I know my wife would like to do one of these or something like this. She was very fascinated by an electric car the last time around, and ended up deciding that the ones that were
in
the
price.
Well, she got a hybrid. She got a hybrid.
So,
But she wanted a pure electric. She wanted like a plug-in electric. But she ended up deciding in the end that for the ones that were in our price range, the range was just too low. It was like 100 miles or 80 miles. It was 100 miles.
It's ridiculous. It was useless. Yeah, agreed.
And like, while yes, that would meet her daily needs most of the time, it's along the lines of, if you forget to plug it in at night, you can't go to work the next day.
That's right. That's
you know,
right.
Yep. And if you know, suddenly something comes up and there's an emergency and you do have to drive somewhere, well, you're screwed. You have to go get a rental car.
That's right.
Or, you know, we have multiple cars in our family, so she could use one of the others. But still, it was like, you know, she really wanted to. She loved the concept of the electric car, but the range was just a killer. But this takes that kind of stuff away, you know, and, you know, $35,000 is in the range of a lot of people. It's out of range of a lot of people as well, but it's getting
it's average price of a car right now. That is the average price of a car in the U.S.
Is it that high? I would have thought it was like in the mid 20s.
It's in the $30,000 range right now.
Okay. Well, you know, so it's right smack there where, you know, and obviously the number of pre-orders, they're going to be a bunch of these things on the damn road.
Yep. I think so.
And as you said, as these get more popular, all of the issues with like charging stations and stuff are going to start going away, because you are going to get massive build out of that network. So that right now, where you have to actually specifically know and think about where's the closest charger on my route, if you get to the point where they're basically at every gas station, then you no longer have to worry about that.
The average new car price in 2015 in the United States, the sale of a car, was $33,560.
Okay.
So there you go, $35,000. There, smack at that number.
Anyway, interesting developments here. Anything else to say about it?
Nope. Wow, you got a phone call on yourself. No, wow.
It was not a phone call. It was it was an email. What?
All right. I allow a notification for an email?
Only for my VIP list.
Ah, okay. Gotcha.
So, like, that was an email from my mom. So she gets on the VIP list, so it'll make a noise when, yeah.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. All right. Good.
Although I've started basically, like, most of my email is not from real people at this point. So basically anyone who's an actual human being who I relate to is pretty much onto my VIP list.
Gotcha.
As opposed to, you know, messages,
bots.
You know, bots and receipts and this and that and all the other crap I get all the time. But if you're an actual human being that I know and correspond with on a, you know, even an occasional basis, you're probably on my VIP list so that it may, you know, it gets a little bit more attention. Because otherwise, even with that, like, I'm at this point horrible at getting back to my personal email, but whatever. Tangent. Let's take a break.
Anyway, all right.
Break. And we'll take a break and we'll come back and we'll do election 2016. Back after this. Hey, we know when you listen to this show, you have thoughts about what we say. You probably want to vent about what we got wrong or what we left out, right? Or maybe you want to suggest some future topics we just haven't gotten to yet. Well then, tell us all about it. Right now, there are 4 ways to get feedback to us. First, you can go to the Curmudgeon's Corner Facebook page and leave comments on the post where we announce all the new episodes. Second, you could go to curmudgeonscorner.com, that's with a hyphen, and leave a comment there instead. Third, both Yvonne and I are on Twitter. You can talk to me at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, or Yvonne at I-M-B-O-U, I-M-B-O-U. Finally, if you don't want to make your comments in a public forum like that, just email me directly at abulsme@abulsme.com. Again, that's A-B-U-L-S-M-E. But, you know, if you don't want us to mention your feedback on the show, be sure to say so, because otherwise we're probably going to respond to your comments on a future show, because, you know, that's what makes the discussion. Thanks,
and we look forward to hearing from you.
It's beginning to look like a brokered convention.
Oh, we'll talk about that in a second.
Snip, snip.
And we are back, and it's time to talk about election 2016. So, Yvonne, during the break, you started to sing a song. I think you should sing it again.
It's beginning to look a lot like a brokered convention.
Okay, you did it better during the break, but yeah. Okay.
I did a bad one. I'm sorry.
So anyway, like the results, as I said, the final delegates are still being counted, blah, 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 still going on. But what it looks like...
Okay, wait.
Yes?
It's beginning to look like a brokered convention. There you go. Sorry.
There you go. A little bit better there. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, that's how I said it in the break. I'm sorry. You put me on the spot. You know, I just screwed it up. So
on the Democratic side... Sanders 43 delegates, Clinton 33, and as we are recording this, there's still 10 delegates to be determined, and of course those may jiggle around a little bit as the counts get finalized, even amongst the ones that are already counted, because those are still estimates at this point. Do Sam from the future here. When those did get finalized, the final Democratic delegate results in Wisconsin were Sanders 48, Clinton 38. And then on the Republican side, it looks like Cruz 33, Trump 6, with 3 still to be determined. Sam from the future here again, once again, with final results. Those 3 undetermined delegates at the time we recorded ended up going to Cruz, and so the results on the Republican side were Cruz 36, Trump 6.
How come Trump got 6? I thought it was winner take all.
No, we went over this last week.
It was by district. Yeah, sorry.
Anyway, there are a couple things here. Given your song about the brokered convention, let's talk about the Republicans first. On the one hand, yes, this plus the results over the last weekend in North Dakota and Colorado. Colorado didn't have all of their stuff. That's this coming weekend. But 2 of their congressional districts had their caucuses, and Cruz won all of them. And a couple other things happened. North Dakota mostly are uncommitted, but a number of those delegates have said sort of what they prefer in a public way to watch. So on my count, and by the way, on electiongraphs.com, I've started actually tracking the uncommitted delegates when, just like I'm tracking super delegates, the uncommitted delegates when they are making public statements, and starting to count those up as well. Of the North Dakota ones, Cruz got 7, Trump got 1, Kasich got 1, it looks like, although that Kasich one may flip to Cruz, depending on who you talk to. And there are others that were in Cruz's slate that may or may not actually be Cruz supporters. So this is sort of a conservative 7-1-1 split there. There were some other unbound delegates in a couple other places that gave Cruz 3, Trump 2. Anyway, the bottom line is, in the last week, Trump has done very badly, and Cruz has done very well. Now, what that ends up in terms of the percentage of the remaining delegates needed to win, which is, of course, what the main thing I track on electiongraphs.com, Trump went from, when we talked last week, needing about 52.2% of the remaining delegates to now needing 55.0%. So he has gotten worse, and he's almost at his worst spot so far. That was 55.5% a while back. And Cruz, by the way, basically kept even from needing 83.7%. Like, he did well enough that he didn't get worse, even though he's really so far behind. So there's no question at all. We are closer to the brokered convention scenario after Wisconsin than before by these numbers. However, And here's the however I want to put in here. If you look at the models of the people who did sort of the demographic modeling of all of the rest of the states that we talked about last week that are sort of modeling out, okay, if all of the states that vote approximately the way you would expect them to based on the demographics and how the states that have already voted have done, you're right around the same track you were last week. In fact, a couple people put together the numbers that said, how badly does Trump have to do to no longer be on track to potentially be right on the edge of having his magic number? And the number is he would have had to do less than 28% in Wisconsin. And I believe the last numbers I saw on the popular vote were around
34%.
And so where that leaves us is that, yes, he did really, really badly in Wisconsin. But if you looked at the demographics, and interestingly enough, that's not the polls. The polls had him only like 3 or 4 points behind Cruz in the average, and he's underperforming that. But he's overperforming the demographic estimates. So basically, we're still right along the same track that we were on before, in those type of projections that people have done. And where those left us are basically, if you don't count these unpledged delegates, gets us to the end of June with Trump like just a handful of delegates short of the number he needs.
Right.
And which would mean that we'd be in the position where how these uncommitted delegates decide would potentially put him over the edge or not. And so we're still on that potential path. We're still right on that edge. Despite the result in Wisconsin, because of the states left in the calendar, Wisconsin is the one that looked worse for him than any other state remaining.
I guess I see that, but at the same time, I mean, it's just okay. Look, his numbers. He performed against the demographic model according to prediction. Yeah. However, according to the polls,
yeah, he underperformed the polls.
Way underperformed the polls.
Yep, he did.
And the question is, I mean, Jesus, this week.
Oh, this was a horrible week for him.
This week he was just, I mean, oh my God. I mean, look, this was like a week, like, I swear to God.
But
it's like,
but what's interesting.
The only thing that was left for him not to do this week was just go and say, look at this fucking moron. Who would vote for me, you fucking suckers? Right,
but what's interesting, like, if you go look at, I haven't looked at the Real Clear Politics average version of this because they didn't have a graph. Real Clear Politics didn't have a graph up for Wisconsin. But if you go to Pollster and look at the graph, Trump was actually narrowing the gap in the last week.
Well, it doesn't seem like he was. I mean, he got fucking crushed.
Well, he did. Well, I'm saying according to the poll trend. Now, that was heavily influenced by one outlier poll that showed him ahead that was released like yesterday. But obviously that didn't happen.
Right.
Like
he got hammered.
Pollster's final poll average was Cruz 41, Trump 38. And obviously he got crushed. The current numbers I'm actually seeing are 48.8 to 34.6. So that's obviously a little bit bigger margin than that. But anyway, like I said, the demographic model had, you know, par being 28%. So he did better than that. I don't know, like, because the things that people point out.
But what I'm trying to say is that polling hasn't been as active as it's been.
No, it hasn't.
For recently. And the question that I'm posing is, Jesus, I mean, this week, he did so horribly. Okay, he said so many fucking things that, I mean, even you could be as diehard as you want for him, and you had to be like thinking, oh my God, what the fuck is he saying?
Well, and so the question then is, does this start affecting the next states down the line?
Exactly.
So next up is New York on the 19th. So we've got what? Like, that's a long time.
We got out of this fucking turkey.
It's like 2 weeks, right?
2 weeks.
So
it's a hell of a long time.
Right. And right now in the poll averages, again, you know, we've got in New York, Donald Trump at over 50% with Kasich at 20 and Cruz at 17. Now, the question is, now, does that change? Does the fact that does what happened last week all of a sudden start having him collapse in New York? Because if he stays anywhere near where he is in New York, he's going to come away with almost all of the 95 delegates from New York.
Yeah.
And I mean, and then the narrative changes overnight to, oh, my God, look at this. Because if you look at the next states, New York, Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, those are all ones where Trump is expected to do really well.
Right.
And
well,
so,
but the question is, so a lot of people are saying that, so Cruz, if you take the you know, he overperformed the real politics average by about 10 points, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And he Trump underperformed that average by about 7.
Uh-huh. Oh.
Big swing, okay, in both directions. If you think about it, I mean, how much we're talking about in a plus minus in a poll. Actually, I take that back. Trump actually hit his rear clip politics average.
Right.
Right on the money. What happened is that Cruz way overperformed his number.
Gotcha.
By a lot. By 10 points. The question that we got like right now is, I mean, does that trend continue of Cruz overperforming? Look, I mean, they have been... are smelling blood. They have been hammering away at Trump. I mean, they said that Wisconsin got blitzed like what anti-Trump recorded. You've got New York with 2 fucking weeks.
And you add to that Trump doing things like taking 5 different positions on abortion in less than 48 hours. You know, everything from we should punish the mother to the law is settled, it is what it is. And you've got him doing multiple things where he basically shows that he doesn't know what he's doing. And the question is, does that matter? We've sort of shown that amongst his core voters, it doesn't. But now that we're down to, you know, Cruz, Kasich, and Trump, you know, is it enough to, you know, bring some of the undecideds, like, all coming to Cruz? Because that's the kind of thing that the break that you mentioned implies, is that the undecideds broke for Cruz.
It seems like it. I mean, that's what it seems like from the numbers. I mean, and look, I mean, when you've got a final result that means in a state where the Republican voters, I mean, you've got, what, 65% not voting for the frontrunner? I mean, that's pretty bad.
Right.
And, you know, they were talking about that the exit polls, okay, for Republicans, like, what was the number? It was like 25% of Republican voters were scared of a Trump presidency. Of Republican voters. I'm not talking about all voters. I'm talking about Republicans. And the thing is that they were saying, look, that number is an astronomical number in any polling that we've done for this. I mean, when we're talking about your own party, okay, and it's like, how the hell does this guy manage to survive through the next couple of months with those numbers?
Right. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the big question is, I mean, but those were the numbers in Wisconsin. And that may not be what New York looks like or Connecticut looks like or Pennsylvania. And so the question is, does his unpopularity because I saw at least one person tweet, and I'm sorry for not having references here, but basically, like, people way overcompensate for the calendar here, in that Wisconsin happens to be the latest state, and Trump gets trounced. So they're oh my God, Trump. Whereas, you know, in 2 weeks, he's probably going to crush it in New York, and everybody's going to be like, ooh, Trump's got it. He's going to wrap it up, blah, 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 blah. Whereas really, we have an idea, like, you know, with these demographic models and other things people are doing, roughly how the rest of these states are going to play out absent big changes. And the question is always, you know, like, again, if you play out the demographics, Trump ends up this in June, not counting uncommitted, just barely short of where he needs to be. So right. He just needs a handful of those uncommitteds to put him over the edge. Now, if, though, you know, we have weeks like this and they actually start damaging Trump, then he definitely ends up under that limit, and he needs more uncommitted delegates in order to put him over the edge, which becomes less and less likely the more he needs, because for the most part, these uncommitted delegates are party people. Right. And I don't mean, like, you know, they're out drinking all the time. I mean, they are people who are heavily involved in Republican Party politics and have been for a while, which generally tends to mean they're probably not Trump people.
Right.
But if we do get some momentum, the question is, does something happen to change these demographics? And I think somebody at 538, it wasn't Nate Silver, it was Harry Enten or one of these other guys, said that so far, you know, demographics have actually been doing a really damn good job at predicting the Republican primary results. Basically, you feed into it, like, you know, what the racial mix is, what the education mix is, and you pops out of that something very close to what actually happens in these elections. And the question is, does something happen to change that?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, maybe he'll come out this week and just say, look, fuck you, voters!
You know, if he was going to do that, he should have done it on April Fool's Day.
That would have been great. That would have been really great, but he didn't take the opportunity.
So, you know, I caution everybody. Yes, this was a bad week. Yes, he got crushed in Wisconsin. Yeah, he didn't do well in North Dakota. He didn't do well in the parts of Colorado that have voted so far, which may mean that he doesn't do well in the rest of Colorado that comes out in a few days. But, you know, he's likely to crush it in a bunch of these Northeast states unless he collapses there. Now, maybe we're finally seeing the Trump collapse. I'm waiting to actually see it before I say that, simply because
we've thought there would have been some before and they just never happened. Yes.
The other bit that we've been talking about, and I think I brought it up for the very first time, like right after Iowa and New Hampshire, but is Trump's delegate ground game is awful. Because he basically hasn't had one. Just like in Iowa, he actually said afterwards, people keep talking about ground game. I didn't even know what that was. That's like an actual Trump quote. And he hasn't been following up in these things. And all of the processes where we've said the actual selection of the human beings who are delegates is often a very separate process than the binding process that's happening in primaries and caucuses. And Trump has just not been organized enough to do that in any sort of successful way. I mean, one example, the six delegates that Cruz got in Colorado and the two congressional districts that had their caucuses last weekend, one of the stories I read about that said basically, like, it looked like more Trump people actually showed up to the caucus than Cruz people. But the Cruz people were organized. They came with a slate of delegates that they wanted to get elected, and they passed out little pieces of paper telling all the Cruz people to please vote for these people because these were the ones that they wanted to make sure got in as delegates and blah, blah, blah. Whereas the Trump people had no idea what the fuck they were doing and voted for all sorts of random people and therefore got shut out.
Well, you see, that's I mean, that's one of the things that we've been talking about this. I mean, Cruz has been playing a very smart ground game. And Trump has been, like, bitching, moaning, and whining about it. And I'm like, well, this is the problem when you're trying to run a campaign where all you're doing it is based on media and you didn't hire any fucking professionals to fucking, like, help you with a stupid thing.
Right.
Okay?
And the one I gave an example in Colorado was an actual caucus where you're getting the actual pledged delegates for this. But even more to the point are all of these ones in all of these other states who may in fact be bound to Trump but don't actually like him. And that sets up all kinds of possibilities for the convention. I saw one person suggesting today that even if Trump gets to the magic number of 1237, Cruz may still not concede at that point because you have the possibility of forcing a vote at a convention prior to the presidential vote to unbind the delegates. And if Cruz has enough of these sort of stealth delegates who really support him but are bound to Trump, then you could actually potentially pass a resolution at the convention to unbind everybody, and then all these numbers we've been talking about for months go out the fucking window. And then, you know, now there's all kinds of talk about, like, if he did that, then it'd be, you know, we've talked about all the chaos possibilities, but these are out there.
Hey, this has been chaos city, man.
I know. And then if he ends up a little bit short and we go to a second ballot, there was a very good Nate Silver article earlier this week that said basically, like, if Trump doesn't get it on the first ballot, he's probably done because of this effect where you have all of these delegates who are bound to Trump but don't really like him. And the second they're not bound anymore, they're out of there.
They're like, fuck you. I mean, you know, forget it.
Now, there's also talk about, well, how about the people who didn't run, the Romneys or Ryans or whatever, and whether or not you allow them in. The flip side of that is if the Trump supporters and Cruz supporters together decide not to allow that, they could make sure that the rules that the convention is actually going under require that you can only vote for people who ran. And then, you know, You have multiple ballots and multiple ballots, and maybe eventually they change that rule. But, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that you could have there. Here's another one, by the way, in terms of that I just want to mention in terms of Trump's stupidity on the delegate game. We mentioned last week that basically everybody threw out their pledge in terms of, eventually supporting the winner. Well, guess what? In South Carolina, that pledge was a requirement to get delegates.
Oh.
That's 50 delegates in South Carolina that belong to Trump, and now there's some talk about whether he forfeited those delegates by reneging on his pledge.
Ouch.
And 50 delegates would make a really big fucking difference right now.
Yes, they would, wouldn't they?
Now, I haven't heard much follow-up on that, so I don't think South Carolina is actually going to pull the trigger on that right now. But I think you know that's in the back pocket now.
So
what happens is you can get to the convention itself, where one of the first things that happens is there's a credentials committee that meets to decide who actually gets officially let in as a damn delegate to the convention and has the right to vote. Well, those 50 delegates in South Carolina could be disputed.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're in for
a lot of these delegates ride. Could be disputed.
We're in for an interesting ride, baby. That's what it's looking like.
Yeah, I mean, the chances of the brokered convention, I think, you know, I'd put, you know, it's been a while since I gave odds on it. Last time I gave odds on it, I was given like 30% odds. I'd up that to 60 at this point. It's by no means certain that we will have a brokered convention. Trump could still pull this out and win it outright. That is still within the realm of possibility. But at this point, I'm going 60% contested convention. And by that, I mean the first. Well, you know, there's these expanded definitions like we talked about a couple weeks ago. Like, usually when I say contested convention, I mean we get to the first vote and nobody has 1237 on the first ballot and you have to go to a second ballot. But there's also that scenario where, you know, Trump doesn't have enough from the primaries and caucuses and has to rely on these uncommitted delegates? And is that contested if it's still not settled? But if we still don't know the winner when they open the convention, does that count as a contested convention, even if it ends up only being one ballot?
No, I say contested convention is if he does not get the nomination on the first ballot.
Right. That's been a traditional definition that I've been working under. But again, like, there's the possibility of the convention opens and we still don't know, but it is still settled on the first ballot. But we don't know when the convention opens, and it's settled in those couple of days during the convention. And then the third possibility is, like, if, like, let's say, we had this rules change to unbind the delegates and Cruz wins on the first ballot, even though Trump theoretically had the most. Is that still a contested convention? There's certainly contesting happening at that convention, but it's not. I'd say, according to the traditional definition of at least two ballots, I'm putting that at 60%. I'm probably at 70% for one of those three scenarios that I just outlined happening. Trump may still pull it out and win outright. But like I said, there are even these scenarios where Trump has 1237, but Cruz has the actual support of the delegates, and they change the fucking rules before the first vote. Yeah, all kinds of things could happen here. Very interesting. One thing I will predict out of this, regardless of who wins or who loses in this, the Republicans are going to change their fucking rules for 2020.
Oh, fuck yeah, they are.
they are going to... they're going to change all sorts of things. We may see some Republican superdelegates.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we are.
Well, it depends who actually gets the nomination, I guess.
I think regardless of who does.
We may see some things that tie... They already added the binding, but they may force the binding so that if you're a bound delegate, you have to actually support the damn guy. You can't just be some random dude chosen by a different process. I don't know, but a lot of how you end up changing the rules depends on who wins and how the November election goes. Because frankly, it's looking like either Trump or Cruz would get crushed by Clinton at this point. And Trump is, I've posted on electiongraphs.com in my commentary, ever since January, almost every single poll that comes out, he's looking worse in the general election than before.
Yep.
All of the stuff that he's been doing to get popular on the Republican side has been destroying him general election wise.
And we haven't gone today for all the outrageous things that he said in the last week. I mean, because he was like,
let's hit a couple of them. He is going to pay off the national debt in 8 years. Did you see that? He's going to pay off all $17 trillion dollars of the national debt in the next 18 years, not just eliminate the deficit. He's going to pay off the debt entirely. And when asked how he would do it, it's trade deals.
The guy is a complete... Either he's an idiot, okay? Or, he's just... that much of a liar that he doesn't care? He thinks that the people that are voting for him are just that kind of a moron that they can't do any math?
Yes, he does. Now, here's the truth of this matter is there is one and only one way to eliminate the national debt entirely in 8 years. You know what it is?
Cut Social Security and Medicare?
No, nowhere near enough. You have to default on it. You have to outright just say, we're not paying it, we're done.
You could abolish Social Security and Medicare.
It wouldn't be enough.
And you would collect the tax, and you could raise taxes, and I'd argue that if you abolished complete, I'm talking abolishing, Social Security and Medicare.
If we're willing to get creative, and I don't know the numbers on Social Security and Medicare, would it be $17 billion in that time frame?
I think it's about two times. It's close
or
to
17 it. Trillion, I should say. So like trillion.
It's close. It'd be close.
I have a better idea. We can sell California.
There. Okay. There. No. Sell Alaska. Back to the Russians.
Yeah. We could do
there
that.
There you go. Or to Canada.
Would they really want Sarah Palin?
We'll sell to Canada instead.
Yeah. So, okay. So I guess there are ways. There are ways.
I mean, it's possible, but not without,
trade deals. I don't think trade deals is
okay,
going to do it.
Okay, there is no way in which a trade deal of any sort would do anything to really reduce the debt. Okay, and any such saying of anybody that says that shows that they are a deluded moron. Okay? So that's my... I'm just... I heard that and I was just like, I wanted to just like take my head and just bash it against the wall as hard as I could.
Now, what other crazy stuff did you do this week? We talked about the abortion
stuff. The abortion
thing. That really started last week. Because we talked about it on last week's show. But NATO, he continued.
How he's going to make Mexico pay for the wall.
Oh, did he give more details on that?
Yes, he did.
Tell us. Was it trade stuff like I suggested?
Well, no. What he was going to do was that he was not going to allow any Mexicans to remit money back to people in Mexico to force Mexico to pay for the wall.
Okay. Would that work?
Doing that would cause quite a hardship on Mexico and Mexicans to do so. Whether that will produce them to go and just fucking sign a check for $20 billion, I don't know. But doing that, I think, well, number one, I don't think he has any legal way of doing that in the first place. Okay? Number one. So
you're assuming
the
he doesn't,
kind of financial.
Yvonne, you're being silly. You're assuming that his first act in office isn't to abolish the Constitution and take full control for himself.
Well, okay, if he did that, then I guess that yes, maybe then he could do so. Yes. But as far as I know, I don't think that unless we have like some kind of like, under economic sanctions against Mexico or something like that, I mean, we'd have to pass a economic sanctions bill.
Yeah.
Like the kind that we had on. Flow of money that way.
Right.
But the repercussions of that in terms of like limiting cash transfers between Mexico and the U.S., an economy that has such a huge amount of trade and commercial ties, would be gargantuan. I mean, it's nuts. So could he impose that? Yes. Will it have the desired effect that he wants? I don't think so. It sure as hell would be one hell of a mess.
Yeah, well, I mean, and a lot of things that Trump has said fall into that category. I mean, basically, asking for protection money from Germany and Japan and those folks.
And the nukes. And that he wanted Korea and Japan to get nukes.
Yep, and, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could make Mexico pay for the wall by invading Mexico and installing a puppet government who will do that for you as well.
Well, he did threaten with use of the military as well, like weeks before. I don't know. These conversations, I mean, really? Are we really?
Okay, Yvonne's breaking up a lot lately. So, Give him a couple seconds. Yvonne. Oh, there's Yvonne. Are you back?
I can hear you. What I was saying is that I don't know. This is just a lot of crazy shit.
No, there definitely is. And okay. Any more crazy stuff from this week? We mentioned the abortion stuff. You did all kinds of opinions there. We mentioned paying off the debt. We mentioned Mexico. Anything else? I mean, every week there's new ones of these. He apologized for going after Ted Cruz's wife, which was interesting because it's the first apology he's done in like the whole election season.
I guess. I mean, Jesus. I don't know. I don't expect that many more to come. I mean, he was like, he's been railing against Trump tonight, like after this loss.
Against Cruz.
Yeah, against Cruz. I mean, calling him a puppet, calling him, I don't know. He's been calling him all sorts. I've been seeing the news headline come across the TV. It's just been calling him all sorts of names. So I don't know how long that civility is going to hold.
Oh, well, there was never any civility. He just sort of admitted that going after Cruz's wife may have backfired and he shouldn't have done it. It wasn't so much a, you know, I really think I was wrong as more a, I guess that didn't work.
Oh God. Well, there you go. So I guess you only get apologies from Trump when saying shit doesn't work, I guess. Is that it?
I think so.
Okay. Oh, that's one hell of a way of working.
Anything else? Going once, going twice.
Sold.
Okay. I think that's a show then.
All right. Well.
So thanks everybody for tuning in yet again. You know, as I mentioned on the election, we've got a little bit more of Colorado coming up. On the Democratic side, we've got Wyoming coming up this weekend. But really, the next big one in both parties, well, Colorado, most of them might be uncommitted, but if they go like the first two congressional districts did, Cruz may pick up a good deal of them. So we'll see. We may have another good day for Cruz. Clinton versus Sanders. Clinton's winning.
Anyway.
Yeah, Sanders won Wisconsin, but not anywhere
nearly enough to make a dent.
And he's what's interesting is now, after so much time with Sanders basically saying, you know, superdelegates are meaningless, you ignore the superdelegates, blah, blah, blah. Now he's talking about superdelegates all the time and how they're going to switch to him en masse. And even he's talking about the scenario where he doesn't catch up with Clinton.
Uh-huh.
But he's won enough in the later states that a massive wave of superdelegates will come in and put him over the edge, even if Clinton's ahead in pledged delegates.
I'm like, James Carville came on today and just said, why the fuck are all these people voting for a guy who's not even a fucking Democrat?
Well, he is now. He wasn't a Democrat, but he is a Democrat now.
My understanding is he's still not a registered Democrat.
He qualified as a Democrat for purposes of the election. Yes, I believe he's still officially independent in the Senate, et cetera. But anyway, yeah, look, yep. I don't begrudge him that, a very significant portion of people really like him, and that's
fine. I get that. I get that. But you see, the thing is, and I say again, this is not the general election for president. This is the process to select the candidate for the Democratic Party.
Right.
And I'm sorry, but I registered Democratic on purpose for a reason. Okay. Because I chose to belong to that party, and I personally don't like this whole thing that a guy who is who's not a fucking registered Democrat can get on the fucking ballot and do all of this shit. That really irks me.
If Democrats are voting for him, I don't care what his registration is, and Democrats are.
No, Well, that goes back also to the fact that I get really annoyed that people need to be really fucking all registered Democrats in order to fucking like really like participate.
Well, that depends on the state too. Bernie's actually been doing best in the open primaries, so
exactly.
And so caucuses.
So that's why I'm like I don't like that. Okay, I just don't.
Anyway, okay. The interesting thing to me is just you can see as we go further in this process, the lengths to which the Bernie supporters have to go in order to come up with a scenario where he wins gets more and more extraordinary.
Yes, it's outlandish.
I mean, they're talking about, you know, maybe he can win in New York after all. Clinton is crushing him in New York right now.
I don't think that's changing.
Even if he catches up a little bit, he's not going to win in New York. And even if he won in New York, he wouldn't win by enough in New York. And
because it's proportional. New York's proportional, right?
Well, yeah. On the Democratic side, they all are proportional.
Right. So therefore, I mean, there's no way that he could win with enough of a margin to make a dent on their delegate count anyway.
Right. And
period.
And so now, after poo-pooing the superdelegates for so long, now he's talking about, you know, convincing superdelegates to come over because of his massive momentum. And yeah, he had a lot of momentum. He won a whole bunch of states in a row just now, but he's not going to win the next few states. Right. And so those arguments sort of start going away, and you know, because now I couldn't believe he's even now making the argument that even if he doesn't get a majority of the pledged delegates, he'll be able to get enough superdelegates to put him over the edge.
Just
a couple months ago, he was talking about how if Clinton did exactly what he just said, how that would be a travesty of justice.
This is why I am just like getting really irritated with the tone of where his campaign is getting to like right now. And I'm like really just, you know, I don't know.
Well,
it's really irritating.
One of the things that's interesting here is, you know, there were a few people in the Democratic race in 2008 who were like, you know, if Clinton doesn't win, I'm out of here. But it feels like that's a much stronger thing with the Bernie guys right now, of people saying that they won't vote for Clinton no matter what. And I don't know how many of them will stick with it. I suspect it's a relatively small number. Like, if this comes down to Clinton versus Trump or Clinton versus Cruz, how many Bernie people are really going to be like, you know, I'm okay with Trump. I'm okay with Cruz.
Right. That's a fucking...
I mean, the argument is they don't have to vote for Cruz, but they could stay home or they could vote for the Green Party or something. But
look. Here's a differential. Like, for example, they were showing that poll on like scared people inside each party.
Yeah.
Look, even like, look, amongst Democrats, how many people were scared of like Clinton winning the nomination or like, the presidency amongst Democrats that voted? It was like a tiny number. I think it's like 1 or 2%, some stupid thing like that.
Right. Lots of Republicans are scared of her, but not that many Democrats.
Hello? Okay, I can hear you again. You said lots of, but I couldn't hear.
lots of Republicans are scared of Clinton, but not that many Democrats.
Exactly, right. So this is why I don't see the same thing happening with all the, as much as the Bernie supporters say that, I'm sure that there's a number of diehard people that are voting right now that for the most part, like we said, they're independents. They're not even registered Democrats anyway, that are not going to do it. So, I get that, but I just don't see that the rank and file Democrat, I don't think is going to do that. It's coming down to Trump versus Clinton. I don't see that happening. Of course, right now we don't have Trump really winning his fucking nomination anyway, like right now. But so we'll see.
I was just looking at the betting odds. Trump, for the first time in a couple months, is now below 50% in the betting market odds for getting the Republican nomination. Yeah, he still has a good shot. He still has a good shot at winning the nomination.
He still has a good shot. There's no, it's not over. It's not over.
It's not over. And I, in fact, you know, he's still the front runner. He is still the more likely nominee than anybody else right now.
Yes.
You know, even if he's under 50%, he's still more likely than anybody else.
Yes, he is.
And I'm not sure I buy he's under 50%. Like, if I had to put odds on it, I'm still going a little bit higher than that. But and I haven't worked out the math this time, so I won't do it, because, like, I gave 60% odds of contested convention, and I haven't figured out all the numbers and math and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, definitely, like...
Well, pull out your old HP calculator. See how that, you know...
You know, I don't actually have a working one of those right now, but I have a program on my iPhone that simulates that calculator, and I use it multiple times every day.
Ah, there you go.
But anyway, HP 48, by the way.
Yes.
SX or GX, but, you know. Awesome calculator. Anyway, Clinton's winning. We're actually going to have one more Democratic debate. I don't know why. You know?
Maybe Bernie will moon the audience or something like that. Who knows?
Yes, that would be just like him. Whatever. Clinton is continuing her inexorable thing, and I think at this point, like, you know, I know the Bernie folks are so excited, and he's raising more money than she is. He's not going anywhere. He's going to force it to go down to the wire. But these scenarios where he's somehow going to take it from her at the convention, even if he doesn't have a majority of pledged delegates, are pure fantasy. You know,
yes, totally.
And him catching up on pledged delegates is pure fantasy at this point, too. Again, like we've said multiple times, absent something catastrophic happening to Clinton. But, you know, anyway, we were wrapping it up when I realized we forgot the Democrats, because,
like I said, feel the math.
Yes. Okay, thanks everybody for joining us and making it through yet another episode. As usual, follow us on Facebook, comment on Facebook. We're at Election Graphs on Facebook. I'm also at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E on Twitter. Yvonne is at IMBO. That's IMBOU. We love to hear from you, and we love it when you tell your friends about our show as well.
All right, before we wrap up completely,
I got the Trump statement
on his loss tonight.
Okay, you're going to read this. Okay.
Yes. Donald J. Trump withstood the onslaught of the establishment yet again, it said. Lyon, L-Y-I-N, by the way, Ted Cruz had the governor of Wisconsin, many conservative talk radio show hosts, and the entire party apparatus behind him. The Trump campaign then accused Cruz of coordinating with a super PAC in violation of I skipped the editorial. Not only was he propelled by the anti-Trump super PACs spending countless millions of dollars in false advertising against Mr. Trump, but he was coordinating with his own super PACs, which is illegal, who totally control him. Ted Cruz is worse than a puppet. He is a Trojan horse being used by the party bosses attempting to steal the nomination away from Mr. Trump. We have total confidence that Mr. Trump will go on to win New York, where he holds a substantial lead in the polls and beyond. So there you go. That's the statement. So, yeah, he was apparently very gracious in defeat.
Yes. Still not as good as the Newt Gingrich one from a couple years ago.
No, it's not.
Nothing will ever beat that statement.
No.
If anybody doesn't know what we're talking about, we're not going to read it right now, but look up Newt Gingrich. Was it a concession or was it his win? It was his win in South Carolina or something like that.
It was just you just got to look for the Newt Gingrich press release, you know, for 2012 election cycle, and it's the only one that really will come up real fast. Okay, so
yeah, you'll find it. If you look for it and can't find it, tweet one of us. We'll find it for you and yes, get you a link.
I'd retweeted it sometime this year.
We read it again at some point. It's wonderful. It's wonderful.
It's wonderful.
And there's also, wonderful. I believe, a dramatic reading by Christopher Walken or somebody of it.
By John Lithgow. They had a brilliant reading of it. Yes.
Anyway, thank you, everybody. I won't repeat the whole spiel again. We're out of here. We're done. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.